Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mystic Records Radio. I'm so happy that you joined us on this Father's Day. And I'm going to play a song here for you from Vomit in the UK, Damned Nation. Thank you for joining us, and I've got Doug Moody here with me, and hi, Doug, how's it going? By the way, happy Father's Day. This is our punk rock papa.
yeah, I'm coming into my 92nd year,
and 50 years of making record music in America. I came here in 1953. As you know, my dad ran the biggest record company in the world, EMI, over in England. So me growing up prior to the war, I was Saturday morning in the recording studio, which was run by clockwork in those days, and we had to wind up the clock, and, you know, the machine worked as... Ever seen those grandfather clocks with those big weights that it goes tick-tock, tick-tock, on a big weight? Well, this weight was my first job. Keep your eye on the ball. I used to have to count 39, 38, 37, and when it came to 5, 6, I got frantic, and my dad would signal, cut his throat, and the band would go bump, 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 and silence, everybody silent, and we'd made another master. So there was no communication between the recording engineer and the director and the band, only the band leader. They had to watch the band leader, and he interpreted whatever signs, speed it up, slow it down, more brass. So I grew up with the record business.
Yes, you did, and you've raised a lot of these musicians who are now in their 60s, who were teenagers at the time when you started Mystic Records, and I'm curious about your transition from the labels that you started back in the 50s, and then 30 years later, after a killer job making buku bucks, you threw it all away for punk rock. Curious minds have got to know.
I think you asked me this when you first met me in 1970. Yeah, 1970. It was 1979. I would say just before 1980, you were probably a teenager in black leather miniskirt with studs, all those bright metal studs all over you, and running around with a camera in Hollywood. And you were sort of adult. You were very adult, but you were also a teenager who wanted to film everything.
I was over 21. I was in my mid-20s.
Honey, I was 50 years
like
old when you first met me, and I'd had some 50 years of music business and 50
yes,
years of starting records and launching
and
people.
And the big record labels, let me see, I know you work for Mercury and RCA.
Yeah.
You know, and they paid you like, what, $50,000 a year in the 50s? My God. People were working for like a dollar an hour if
well,
they were
well,
lucky.
Well, my first job was a dollar an hour. I was doing photographs of desks. Desks Incorporated hired me, and I wanted to crack into the record business, and I didn't want to just get an ordinary job when I came. I hung out with black people because I liked their music, and I didn't have any control over anything in England. We didn't have this, you know, one camp of American white soldiers and one camp for black American soldiers. That was in England during the war.
Right,
and
right.
We
but
didn't
I mean,
understand
we're...
that, but that didn't... When I came to America, there was a big division, and the kind of music I liked right away, gospel music I loved, was
okay,
mostly
but
black
my
people.
My question is, how did you go from all of that to punk rock? That's a very, there's a big difference between gospel and punk, you know? And you know, a lot of these kids, I mean, gosh, Albie gave you a call today to wish you happy Father's Day, you know? He was a teenager when you first started Mystic. And Tim McDuffie, I mean, so many of these guys, I mean, there's 300 reasons on the back of Mystic T-shirts. They give all of these kids names and their bands that you gave a chance to.
Okay, here's where you're... What you're actually finding is I got interested in every kind of music possible. I even went looking on Indian reservations, and I couldn't find Indian music. I found black music, and I wrote, in the first year I was here, I wrote a gospel song with Mahalia Jackson, and it sold a million records,
no matter how you pray. That's
yeah.
right.
So,
that's
I right. mean, I examined all kinds of music, and I love music. I love musicians.
And how did you find punk rock?
The first punk rock you heard,
what did you think of it?
Well, actually, the British bands were punk when I left England. They were starting to erupt. They were wearing long hair. Everybody, we all wore long hair down to our shoulders, and that was against going in the army that shaved all your hair off. So we always were rebellious in the music business when I left England, and the beginning of all the groups was happening as I left. When I got to America, it was a whole different ball game. All of the American music was run by four big companies. One of them was RCA, which was Radio Corporation. They also controlled television, radio, and the record company. The next biggest record company was Sears Roebuck. They owned a radio station in Chicago called WLS, which meant World's Largest Store. WLS,
cool.
World's Largest Store.
They had
a store in every town where they sold records, and they hired me. Sears Roebuck hired me to copy the hits on the charts, and I did, and I made four new records every month, and Sears Roebuck sold 1 million records every month in their stores all over the country, copies of the hits. So I was dealing with major record companies, but I was launching unknown talent. This was me. Launch unknown people wherever you can. So there I'm doing that, and then suddenly they wanted me to go back to Europe and bring in a huge classical catalog, which I was classical anyway. I had done 12 years of conducting before I was into the Royal Air Force, and then did the Berlin airlift and thing, and fed Germans, and decided I'm coming here where all the food is. I'm coming. So I had my interrupted life, and I went back to Europe, and I got the biggest catalog ever, and I was quite happy making copies of hit records and making Peter and the Wolf and all famous guitar and famous violin players. And then I started hanging
out. You currently have a couple of violin players uptown
on 125th Street, and I started hanging out with black musicians, and that's when it hit me. I loved what I was doing. That's when I ran across In the Still of the Night by the Five Satins. It
Good
was
song.
That sold 3.25 million and was never on any charts. So what was appealing to me was working with unknown people on music that people wanted to hear, and radio stations were willing to play it if you could get to them. And the only thing that was printed was the top 10 and the top 20 of the major labels. So you could see I was gradually being eased out of the major concern, because every time I got a hit record on the charts, Warner Brothers or somebody would cover me and buy the rights of that record from everybody, and I couldn't fight them. I could not fight Warner Brothers. They had too much money and too much street power. So
right.
I started looking around for something else to do after I lost the hit record that I was breaking called Rock and Roll Heaven. And the Righteous Brothers covered me, and Warner Brothers distributed it, and I didn't stand a chance. So I gave up after losing 3 million sellers, that I was a lone guy promoting my way, and I had to find something that I could live with. And what happened is the bands started coming in from Scotland playing punk music. Oh, and I've absolutely fell for it. And the American bands started copying them. They weren't exactly the same punk music that the English bands, but they were Bash and Slash, and one of them was Aggression. Aggression was a Slash and Bash, and I loved the sound of them. And so
and
that's when
teenagers.
I started Mystic Records. I
sure.
decided this is the perfect field for me. This is people wanting to make a change, people with a new kind of beat and yelling at the top of their voice things that they believed in. I loved it. So I started Mystic. That would be around 1986. Well, just before 1980. That's when you met me, late 1970s. So 1980 is when I started Mystic, okay?
Very, very good. And, you know, I have to say, you currently have a couple violin players in your quay here. And we've put out music for, you know, a lot of these kids. I mean, you know, those guys were all teenagers, and they look up to you as their punk rock papa, and that's why we're saluting you today, because you are our punk rock papa, 91 years old, and, you know, we're still going strong, you know, and I think that punk rock music has the freedom that we all love so much. So with that to say, I'm going to play one of the first songs off of the new Mystic album called Vigorous Blast, and it's titled Sick of It.
I'm so sick of it! I'm so sick of it! I'm so sick of it!
Cut that a little bit short and get back to Doug Moody here. So, you know, the song says it all. I'm so sick of it, you know, and so many punk rock songs, you know, have really good lyrics, and we're coming out with lyric videos, and bands are just knocking on our door. We have a new band that is from Brazil that contacted me a couple weeks back, and they're anxious to come out on Mystic, and they sent us their video, and I posted it on Facebook. It's pretty cool. They did like a cartoon video for you, and I just have to say, you know, add my two cents too, because like you, I grew up with classical music, and I was a musician like you as well. only I played the organ and piano. And the first time I heard punk rock, it's like, yeah, I can really get into this, you know? You can say what you want and have the freedom to do it. And Mystic Records gave these boys the platform to record it and put it out on records. So what was it like having a bunch of unruly teenagers in the studio?
Well, you got to realize I was one of them once. I was a rebellious kid all my life. I didn't live up to form. I went to a gentleman's school. I was trained to have 3 changes of clothing a day and be ready to speak in Latin and be ready to speak and remember Odysseus, the Odyssey, the Greek story we had to read. And then we had to divide the class into 2 and argue with each other. And then the very thing we were promoting, we were against and set off against each other, and we had to have gentlemanly arguments. And
debating,
then all of a sudden there was
fun.
A war. And
yeah.
Always being a gentleman and opening doors for ladies, suddenly ladies were driving ambulance trucks and buses and ladies. Never in your life. Well,
right.
They never gave up. They took over when the men went to war, and I became a messenger boy, so reporting what bombs had done to the telephone lines, and the only way we could ask for a fireman or an ambulance, or the only way we could say what was going on, was in communication with the telephone. And with the telephone lines being knocked out, we were an essential thing. So at 16, I'm running around in the bombing zone and occasionally sleeping at night in the shelter. And most of the shelters I never liked going in because you were ankle deep in water. Well, you know, there was so much water flowing around from the Thames. Every fireman in the world came and put a hose in the Thames and poured water on everything. So it was a strange world from being a gentleman and all in the music business to suddenly in the middle of a war. And then after that, I was in the Royal Air Force. And feeding the Germans and then seeing all that food coming from America, I said, I'll never be hungry again. I'm going to America. It was nothing to do with music. It was all to do with survival. Because when I opened the door for a young lady and she laughed at me and said, that was pre-war, Doug. We don't need men to open doors. We need men in our lives. So I thought, well, everything's changed, isn't it? You know, becoming a gentleman doesn't mean anything. Being British doesn't mean anything. You don't have any empire. What the hell next? So I went to America. And the people who greeted me were black.
Opening a door for a lady is
always a good thing. Huh?
Opening a door for a lady is always a nice thing to do.
Well, I still do it. So, you know, I was taught that way. Anyway, so the moment I get into America, I find their business is run by big business. The film people control the films, and the radio is controlled by NBC and ABC, and there's no room for anything. So first of all, they tried me out as a disc jockey, and I was on 300 stations every morning at WOR, and I was Mr. Jukebox, and I will tell you what we're going to put into the jukebox this week. And people loved me as Mr. Jukebox, but I didn't like it, so I quit that and started putting out black records. And I had a label called Herald and Ember. And every year we had a million seller. And now, don't let anybody tell you it's fun having a million seller. The first thing you got to do is pay for the records that you're selling. So the first thing is I had a million records ordered, and I had to pay for that million records. I hadn't got any money, and I was borrowing money all over the place, and the banks really didn't understand what kind of business I was in, and I was sleeping and living at the $6 a night where the YMCA. And it was just kind of a nightmare to realize that finally I got a hit record and I can't afford to be in business. So I had never had the experience. And since then, I've had 53 gold and platinum records, and I've had to pay for every one of them. I've always been broke. I've always been $20,000-$30,000 in the red because
and still are.
You don't get paid on records until for 2 years. So
I know,
you ask
ridiculous.
Me, why do I do it? Because the excitement, it's like, it's better than horse racing. You're dealing with
kids,
people, and you're dealing with music. It's the most exciting thing in the world.
Yes, it is very exciting. And, well, we're down to our last 2 minutes, Doug. Time flies when you're having fun, right?
Oh, I love chatting. Anybody can go to Doug Mystic at AOL, Doug Mystic AOL, and I'll chat with you. Ask me a question on the internet, and I'll be answering you as much as I can tell you whatever about, because I love the music business.
Yes, you do, and you've helped a lot of kids stay off the street while they were recording in the studio, and I really feel that, you know, you did a really good thing by putting these kids out, giving them some hope where a lot of them came from dysfunctional homes and they didn't have any real proper home life, you know, and you gave them a family to believe in, and we are a tradition. Pump Mystic Records is a family tradition, and when we bring new groups in, I always tell them, welcome to the family.
I got one thing I want to add.
Go for it.
Presenting a record by Candice D'Andrea called Mystic Radio Presents Party or Go Home. This is off of a pirate radio station we had in Saturday nights 4 years ago in Hollywood in the studio. We had 1.5 mile radius on the radio, and cars would circle Mystic, Cathy Grand, and Hollywood Boulevard on Saturday night with the windows down and the radio up, and they would all be playing this 1 minute of every band that recorded that month at Mystic. And with this streamer car going round and round the two blocks, blaring punk music, it only took an hour or sometimes two for the police to block off and chase them off the streets. Then we'd all meet down at the Cathy the Grand with Candice, because she ran the Cathy the Grand pub or whatever it was. And down in the basement, we had the wires hooked up to the studio, and we recorded punk music, and we recorded people like Dr. No, Ill Repute, and we launched all kinds of bands, including Don't Know. He was there, and I want you to. There's 40 bands and 1 minute on this record. This is my favorite record.
It's a beautiful record.
This was
record
40
too.
Bands and one, and Candice D'Andrea produced it and put it out. It's called Mystic Radio, Party or Go Home. It is a fantastic record, 40 bands, 1 minute each, and it's live from Mystic way, way back on a pirate radio. We had an hour tape, and we just used to play it and then go and party down the street. Remember
very
those
good.
Days?
Very, very good. Okay,
remember?
Well, you know, it's a beautiful record. It's iridescent, green with sparkle flakes. And if you want to pick up a copy, go to mysticrecordshq.com. And we're out of time for today, and I want to thank you, Doug Moody, for sharing your work with us. And here's Vomit, Life's Not Fair.
Thank you. Well,
I'm 2 weeks old, got a job. Mother said too late.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. You're welcome.
No, I said thank you.
Yes, you did. All right, and you're very welcome. Thank you.
Waiting outside the ice, hey, it's something.